So I don't know if y'all are like me or not, but when I am faced with making a decision that reflects what I should do, but not so much what I want to do, or when I find myself in a situation where the Spirit is whispering into my ear or to my heart a particular course of action that is either uncomfortable or undesirable or both, I've looked up at God and thought, "You want me to do what?" Sometimes I am so bold to say it out loud and with some attitude. "You want me to do what?" Has anyone in here ever felt like that or said that? If we had the time this morning, I bet we could go around and share some stories when some people could fairly easily recall one of those times when you've had this feeling or this idea that has become a part of your consciousness. Maybe it's something that you try to dismiss and move on from, but the more you try to think about it, the more you think about it, and you look and it's over your shoulder and the anxiety builds. Or perhaps it's one of those crossroads kinds of decisions, a moment of truth when a decision has to be made on the spot. Do I or don't I? Your heart races, you look around searching for reassurance or for the answer, and you experience a moment wrapped in panic. Or maybe it's a long, laboring process of discernment, complete with pacing and consternation and wringing of hands and much anxiety. We live in a time, and I think all people living throughout history have as well, when anxiety is high, where enormous social chaos is all around us, and the political environment is caustic. It seems that everywhere I turn, injustice is visible. We have to turn no further than the front page of a paper or our Facebook feeds or the news or the internet to hear the horrifying things being said and being done to people and our world. I haven't walked down a single street here in the Bay Area since I've been here almost a year that I haven't seen at least one person visibly struggling with the weight of economic injustice, the palpable realities of poverty and homelessness mingled with hopelessness. All around me, people of color or people who are transgender or people who are of both groups, they live lives filled with fear and anxiety that I myself have scarcely ever felt, much less had to live with on a daily basis. And I don't think I've been through a single day, even before I became conscious of it, where I didn't hear or see some form of outright sexism. And on. And all the more, ever present, that voice inside me. Do you hear it inside yourselves? "I need you to do something about this. I need you. I need you to do something. I've given you everything you need. You can do something about this." And all too often, my response has been, "You want me? You want me to do what?" When I said earlier that people throughout history have had the same kinds of experiences as we do, well, the Bible gives us not a few glimpses to remind us that we, even in all of our modernity, are not alone. Remember Zechariah and his encounter with the angel. Said something like, "You've got to be kidding. And you want me to name him what?" The disciples, well, they give us several glimpses into their own incredulity at the words of Jesus. "You want us to throw our nets where? We've already done that. Seriously, we can't feed all these people. Whatever. Okay, you want me to walk out of this boat to you standing over there across the water? You want us to tell the innkeeper what? You expect us to stay here and pray with you amid all this chaos? And what about the people that Jesus met along the way? born again. I'm a grown adult. How is that even possible? You want me to get rid of all my stuff, all of my possessions, and put you first? Her sins are forgiven. What do you mean, do not weep? And I wonder if some of the people from the stories that I've learned since I was a child might have thought, okay, you want me to put that mud that you made with your spit, and you want me to put that on my eyes? Or, I have leprosy. I'm not even supposed to be near you, much less let you touch me. I couldn't possibly. This is crazy. I know if I just touch his cloak, but there are people watching, and it's such a risk. Or perhaps someone even thought, you want me to stay with you until they take your body off the cross and put you in the tomb? Like a sometimes petulant child, I myself deal with this question quite often, even at my age. That I am standing here before you this morning is in spite of the many times that I looked at God and said, uh-uh. In times of challenge, it has often, though, been helpful for me to imagine Jesus and remember that Jesus was fully and completely human, like you and like me. We have a lot of Jesus' teachings in the few books in this Bible. And they tell us about a lot of Jesus' emotions. His joy, praise, friendship, sorrow, love, and even anger. And we have recorded the prayer of Jesus to let this cup pass from me hours before the crucifixion. And that's all I had really ever thought of before. And I can't imagine in all the time that Jesus knew what Jesus' path was and what its destination was, that Jesus ever looked up at God and said, you want me to do what? But in my searching, it has occurred to me that maybe Jesus did experience some fear and some anxiety about where Jesus' path lay, and maybe I had overlooked it. Turns out I did miss at least one passage that serves as a clue that Jesus, in fact, felt these emotions too. So in the text that was read for us this morning, Luke has set up for young Theophilus and for the generations to come a story about the final days of Jesus' physical life. And by the time we get to this moment, we can safely presume that Jesus is not a stranger to Samaria or to the politics and social discord that divided the Jews and the Samaritans. So to travel between the north, say, and Galilee, where Jesus was from, and the south, Judea, where Jerusalem was, you had to go through Samaria. And this presented a problem for Jews who traveled because of the rivalry between the Jews and the Samaritans, which is the result of a legacy of bitter rivalry that I don't have time to go into this morning. Let's think Slytherins versus Gryffindor. But trust me when I say there was no love lost between these two groups. And Samaria was hostile territory for the Jews, so much so that the Jews on their way down would go around Samaria, out of their way, to get to Jerusalem and back. And we also know that the Jews were known for their very own, very obvious bias against the Samaritans. Yet, Jesus had been here before, right? The Gospel of Jesus, according to John, records one of Jesus' trips home from Judea when Jesus passed through Samaria. This is where Jesus met the Samaritan woman at the well and engaged in conversation with her, which was truly radical stuff for that day and time. The woman is shocked that Jesus, a Jewish man, is talking to her. And when the disciples get back on the scene, they're shocked at what Jesus is doing. And we may also remember the way Jesus illustrated how to care for one another by making the hero of one story not a Jew, but a Samaritan. So for at least these reasons, we can make the case that Jesus would be anxious about going to Jerusalem this final time through Samaria. As a person of privilege in that culture, Jewish and male, Jesus had the choice. Jesus could have skipped Samaria and just gone around. The Jews did it all the time. The decision to go through Samaria, or at least try, was not at all about expediency. Jesus was not following the liturgical calendar and therefore in a hurry to get to Jerusalem by Palm Sunday to arrive in time for Good Friday. One of my friends joked with me as I was preparing this that Jesus was not trying to avoid being late to his own funeral. There was purpose in this decision, and Jesus knew it fully. But that does not mean it was an easy decision to make. The truth of the matter here is that at this moment in Jesus' life, knowing that it was time for the final trip from home to execution in Jerusalem, Jesus is again confronted with going through hostile territory to get there, of facing likely discrimination. Let me say that again. Jesus is confronted with going through hostile territory to get where Jesus was called to go. That sounds a bit like our lives, like our day and times, doesn't it? So to me, this moment illustrates a time when Jesus, a human being just like you and me, someone who is a person of some privilege, a person with the Spirit dwelling in them, experiences moments of anxiety about deciding whether to listen to that voice and go where it was beckoning Jesus to go. So, as Jesus, as paraphrased in the Message, gathered up his courage and steeled himself for the journey to Jerusalem, Jesus' path lay through Samaria. And sure enough, when the Samaritans found out that Jesus was headed to Jerusalem, there was again no room at the inn for Jesus. Of course, this ticks off the disciples, right? They come back to Jesus indignant. How dare they? Asking if Jesus, and this cracks me up, asking if Jesus wants them to call down holy fire and incinerate these insolent Samaritans. I can just imagine the look on Jesus' face as Jesus rebuked them for this behavior before moving on to another village and on to the part of the journey when Jesus would explain the true reality of the path for those who want to follow Jesus. And I can't help but wonder if even then, as Jesus was led to tell the disciples the very difficult truths, if Jesus thought, do you really want me to tell them this? I mean, what's the point? They're either going to betray me or deny me or scatter when everything goes down. So what's the point? And yet even then, Jesus keeps walking toward the cross. You want me to do what? I can remember sometime, probably around the time I was going into high school, my mother telling me things like, now Todd, if you hear somebody telling a dirty joke at school, you need to be the one to tell them that's wrong. So when faced with that very decision and others like it, I can still hear her voice and I can still feel my heart racing, thinking, oh God, you want me to do what? And my challenge to that voice has not stopped, despite my age. I would continue to struggle against that voice. So you want me to move away from the only place I've ever lived and my home and go to seminary? You want me to not only go to this Black Lives Matter rally, but you also want me to take the message of that rally back to my community? You want me to preach? You sure you don't have the wrong guy? So this inner voice, the one that can trigger fear and doubt and anxiety that Hillary told us about last week, it speaks this question to us in many different forms. You want me to go through hostile territory? You want me to put loving my neighbor, even the ones who don't look like me or have the same faith as I do or who are of the same socioeconomic status, you want me to love them like you do? You want me to put you above all of my other commitments on my calendar. And you mean now, not later? Like I can't click maybe or interested? So this question might also sound like this. You want me to talk to my friends. And this is a big deal where I come from. You want me to talk to my friends about how it's just completely inappropriate to use the B word ever for any reason and why? They'll hate me for it. Am I really supposed to be the person that needs to explain why All Lives Matter is not only counter-effective but also extremely racist? You want me to go where? But I don't know any transgender people or any immigrants. And besides, what if they reject me? This woman on the street or on the train or at the corner, how do I really know what she's going to use this money with if I give it to her? My friends, I have to believe that Jesus was not so unlike you and me that Jesus too struggled with the things that the Spirit prompted Jesus to do, with holding our candle, as was sung in the song earlier. And like Jesus, I have to believe that sometimes the path that we're on is going to take us through Samaria, like it or not. In fact, I don't think we can really change the world unless or until we go there. And when we do, it will sometimes make us uncomfortable and cause us to explore the growing edges of our faith. Like Jesus, responding to the voice inside us, compelling us to take action, requires us to set our faith face toward justice. To, like Jesus, gather our courage and steel ourselves for the journey. For we are, for all intents and purposes, the hands and the feet and the voices of justice in a world that so badly needs it. Ultimately, I think the takeaway from this encounter of Jesus in Samaria is something other than don't be afraid. Audre Lorde, in her book, Zami, A New Spelling of My Name, said, "Fear does not have to incapacitate us." What we can learn here is to take courage, to think it through, sure, to wrestle with it, sure, to pray over it, and then give it a shot. Though sometimes it would be easier to call down the fire of God, as some in our modern culture are known for doing. But Jesus knew that you can't call down hellfire on people just because you don't like them, just because they don't welcome you, or because they disagree with you. Instead, we must be bold and stand up and show up and call out. And we'll know the time is right when we feel that burning deep inside our chests, when we feel that tremble, and when we learn to nurture that feeling of inspiration and motivation and let the adrenaline of the power of God move us toward great and powerful acts of justice. May we speak and may we act, people of God, even when we're afraid. Amen.